She who saw all things in a broad-bound earth and beyond and knew what was to be known. She who had seen what there was and had embraced the otherness. She to whom the image clung like a mirror, a display of crisis, and who dwelt together with a devised becoming. She knows and sees the unknown and lays them bare. She's the monstrous other, the dark goddess, the possessive gen, the dividing persona. She restores myth and histories, the untold and forgotten, the misread and uneven, those of and from the Near East.
Is a flame and blaze. She's a gem made of a smokeless and scorching fire, among a race created by Allah prior to humans. From the very day of her birth, she was responsible for common fever, the fever of fevers, as they called it. The heat she brings to the human body is a symptom of an underlying condition, not a condition itself. Out into the world, she comes to possess earth and humans alike.
One, a discourse on refiguring the jinn. Jinn are known as supernatural creatures in Islamic culture and teaching. According to Quran, jinn are shapeshifters made of smokeless fire, occupying a parallel world to that of mankind. Together, jinn, humans, and angels compose the three sentient creations of Allah. But unlike angels, who have no ability to obey or disobey, jinn have the power of choice and will. This is what makes them a desirable figure for an act of refiguring. In the Iranian culture, jinn are fearsome and honored. My uprising in Iran was full of ancient, mythical narratives, all involving extraordinary and supernatural beings. My bedtime stories of childhood, told often by my grandmother, were about her memories of encounter with jinn, usually in the public bathhouse of her village. So many nights, I went to sleep imagining the magic jinn could bring into what felt like a broken life lived through oppressive days of post-revolution and in Iran-Iraq war towards an uncertain future. When jinn possesses humans, they guarantee an utter openness, a new kind of entrance, portal, and arrival to the outside. At this very moment in time and space, as I stand here to perform this presentation, to become Huma and shift roles back and forth to a human and non-human form, and as I look for ways to position this story, I want to remind you, dear audience, that this space contains no left and right, no up and down. So I will be orienting and disorienting you for a practice of refiguration and fabulation, a practice of alternative representation with myth and tales as a point of departure. Refiguring as a position of going back and reimagining the past so that we can create and reimagine alternative multiple futures and worlds. So that we can collapse the political notion of linear space and time as an act of resistance. Refiguring as a ficto-feminist and activism practice to reflect on the effects of historical and digital colonialism and other forms of oppression and catastrophe.
She, Huma, could not best. She leads all the burnings, looking up from the sun. She is a demon with three heads, two identical, vaguely equine, one looking right and the other left, leveled within an infinite horizon to see the disaster above her. The third head faces forward, above the other two, looking into the future. Her open legs with bent knees and open arms, suppressing all creatures. great in respect, a monster in her form. She's the sight of the warm globe and the slowly burning human.
Two, a discourse on cozy catastrophism. In 1998, at the age of 13, I spent the whole summer obsessively watching the movie Titanic over and over. That very summer, due to drought, water supply alternated between two major zones on odd and even days in Iran. Titanic made that waterless hot summer a more tolerable reality, allowing for a lazy stretch of days between a factual and fictional catastrophe made possible by two ironic binary power plays of nature. Later in life, I thought back a lot about that summer, realizing the key coincidence was actually not the water, but the lifeboat, both as an object and a metaphor. The lifeboat that in Titanic rescued a large number of first-class passengers while the lower class or weak or disabled others froze and drowned. That very lifeboat taught me that ecological and social catastrophe are not shared equally. For the sake of this story, recall where you were when you first watched Titanic, and if climate change meant your daily life or limited access to natural resources, or if living under a corrupted system left you with a similar memory. Because catastrophe is political and uneven, survival is political and uneven, access is political and uneven, fire is political and uneven, earth is political and uneven, air is political and uneven, water is political and uneven. This is the trouble with the amount of airtime that the Western voices are given in discussions of topics such as Anthropocene, climate change, and the present and the future of whatsoever catastrophe ahead of us. This kind of approach affects us and how we behave towards the future, and in words of the Out of the Woods Collective, empower a certain white male heterosexual subject. This is about colonial catastrophism and the problem of cozy catastrophism when our dreams and fears and nightmares are picked and chosen and amplified unequally.
Her three talismans are encountered frequently. One to simply summon and invoke her, to call and conjure her, chanting her name seven times in a row. She enters from the most unforeseen openings. She bubbles up and out of the deep, dark bowels of the earth, forcing the heat of the desert to all she will possess. In favor of the rotting and heated bodies, airs, rocks, and oceans. Her second talisman is to both bring and treat the fevered skin. One no one could elude. One she's the most worshipped for. She then extends her body to make all temperatures equal. Above the normal on all surfaces. For the dehydrated and the unsuffered from drought. To rise and drop the existing catastrophe in all directions, from north to south and east to west, she looks into a reflection, giving a second self to her. One half cracking, the other nourishing the hosts. To colonize the colonizers, to occupy the occupiers of this body and these lands. She communicates with the diseased. She is a monster and should be.
Three, a discourse on monstrosity and other future building in this time of invisibility. To bring this back to Jin and the plural futures, I want to focus on two of the most known characteristics of Jin as monstrous figures. Invisibility and agency. Jinn are invisible creatures that reveal themselves to humans to solve or create a catastrophic situation. Many of them can often be mistaken on first sight as humans unless one looks down to see their feet, which is revealed in the shape of hoof, a sign my grandmother warned me about. On the human monster axis, and unlike how it works in the lives we live, Jen turned their power of invisibility and their choice for visibility into a position of agency. Rosie Bradotti says that the monstrous as a borderline figure blurs the boundaries between hierarchically established distinctions, between human, non-human, Western, non-Western, and so on, and also between horizontal differences. In my current in-progress research and art project, which Huma is a part of, called She Who Sees the Unknown, an army of dark goddesses, Jen, and monstrous figures of the Middle East come together to establish and refigure this power structure. Through myth thinking and future building and the use of present technologies like 3D scanners and 3D printers as tools of investigation, each figure allows for the creation of platform for rethinking, discussing, and activating of a specific topic. The question we together ask is that, while staying with the trouble, how can we extend our bodies as marginalized groups toward other kinds of geopolitics and futures? My focus here is also specifically on the Middle East and its lack of representation in the present and participation in the future, its lack of agency and its invisibility. If we are here to talk about turning points in history, like the year 1948, for me and many from the Muslim and banned countries, the past years of Brexit and Trump and the Syrian crisis are signs that we are in a new kind of turning point. But the only real way to understand these troubles and struggles and to change them is to be extremely careful about whose catastrophe and voice we empower and why. For example, in a conference like this. When thinking about technology and futures and new worlds, it is perhaps time for retiring Donna Haraway's cyborg and stretching our imagination to new set of figures that do not come from a white or Western set of structures and knowledge base. If Haraway claimed to be a cyborg rather than a motherly earthly goddess, I claim to be Jen rather than a cyborg. I want to leave you with this one last image. In many Arabic and Persian tales, when jinn possess a person, they lay them open, a butchered opening to an outside. The only way to stay sane when possessed by them is to participate with them. If one does not open up for this process of destruction and rebuilding, it will result in incurable delirium and madness.
Her third talisman, one she's the most feared for, one that will collapse all actuals, is the infectious madness. Rooted from the incurable heat leading into chronic hallucinations, causing irritability, causing convolutions, causing sea-level sweat. All men gone mad by Huma, and no son was left sane to his father. And the gods cried out from this image the return of the repressed, the underprivileged. She Huma who shatters the unjust subject to expose symptoms, causing delirium, causing alienation, causing horizontal difference, causing universal blurring, causing immediate cruelty of nature, all to give birth to a parallel world between the ill and the healthy flesh.